This is our fourth Sunday night in the Patterning After the Healthy Christ series. We've been taking the whole theme of letting the indwelling presence of the Lord be a mark of our emotional and temperamental life. I've long ago been intrigued by a phrase that says there are two kinds of heresies. One kind of heresy is doctrinal heresy, and the other kind is relational heresy. And it's possible to agree with everything in the fundamentals of faith, and yet to be out of the Lord's pattern for our life if our temperament and our emotion is not showing growth in a Christward direction. Plants will grow toward the sun, grow in the direction of the sun, and Christians aren't perfect, but one of the things we need to be doing because of God's grace is be growing in the direction of the sun. I'm impressed with the change that Jesus makes in our life when we come to Him, especially in this matter of anger. You know, when Jesus is risen from the dead and has triumphed, you would think that now that He has shown that all power is in His hands, that He would maybe throw some of that weight around to the people that had done Him in. I mean, that would be my kind of temptation. If I had just scored a massive victory over everybody that had put me down and wanted me out, and I could do to them anything that I wanted to do, I think I would be tempted to throw my weight around a little bit. And Jesus, though, when He comes to His disciples, gives us a tip-off as to the disposition of His nature, when His first words to them are, "Shalom, peace, I leave with you." There's no anger about what has been done to Him, no rage boiling in His life, no get-even tendency, although He is in a position of getting even. And it is ultimately that kind of love and reaching which gets a hold of a religious fanatic by the name of Ayatollah Khomeini, Saul, because that's what Saul was. He was an Ayatollah. How do you say the word right? I'm mispronouncing it. I never could pronounce it right. Khomeini. Saul was nothing but a Khomeini. He was a religious zealot who believed in killing people of other religious faiths because they stood in God's way. He was a true bigot. And he believed that solving religious problems and other problems was revealed in dragging people off to prison and putting them to death. By his own testimony, he is a man of violence. When Jesus enters his life, he never raises his fist at anybody for the rest of his life. God, in converting him, has also healed the anger in his life. I'd like for us to take some moments to do as we've been doing all along, taking our pulse in various areas, and maybe evaluating the level of peace versus hostility that is in our life. So I think I have about 7 questions this evening that will help us do that. First question is simply this. Do I have a quick temper? Do I have a quick temper? If we have a quick temper, it probably does suggest a lot of hostility in our life. I've often compared our emotions to water that is in a cup. If you bump somebody that is holding a cup full of water, whatever is in the cup sloshes out. And if in the cup is a lot of anger and hostility and resentment, and the cup is bumped, that'll come sloshing out. If in the cup is a lot of peace, tranquility, joy, and rest, that'll come sloshing out as well. Depends on what's in the cup. Do I have a quick temper? 2, am I apt to make thoughtless, unfeeling remarks? Apt to make thoughtless, unfeeling remarks. You're no good. You don't do anything right. You're nothing but trouble. Wish I'd never met you. Whatever. Well, you think of this kind of language. Consider for a moment having a potted plant in your house. What is going to help it most? Pouring acid upon it or pouring water upon it? Too much water will probably kill it, but any degree of acid for sure will kill it. Needs water more than acid. Words can be like acid. 3, when I offer a suggestion, is it apt to be more critical than helpful? Is it apt to be more critical than helpful? The motive behind that question is, really, it assesses whether or not we're truly seeking change in another person's life and approaching them in a way that will help them bring that change, or we just want to kind of get things off our chest and let them know you've done things wrong again. Am I apt to be more critical than helpful? 4, am I inclined to tell people off? Am I inclined to tell people off? This is called giving a person a piece of our mind. All right? And generally, when we give a person a piece of our mind, it is the angry piece of our mind. And it's the P-I-E-C-E of our mind rather than the P-E-A-C-E of our mind. 5. Am I quick to forgive a mistake and overlook a discourtesy? Am I quick to forgive a mistake and overlook a discourtesy? I am fascinated by the forgiveness of the Lord after His resurrection. When He says that repentance and forgiveness of sins will be preached in His name to all nations, beginning at Jerusalem, Luke 24:47. Beginning at Jerusalem, the place where it happened, the Lord was quick to forgive a, quote, mistake, the crucifixion, and a discourtesy, the treatment that He received. 6. Am I superior and overbearing in my attitude toward others? I'm right, they're wrong, that's just the way it is, because they're not as knowledgeable as I am, or whatever. Am I superior and overbearing in my attitude toward others? And finally, am I quick to complain when inconvenienced or imposed upon? Am I quick to complain when inconvenienced or imposed upon? That's why I joked, half jokingly, half serious, a couple Sundays ago when I talked about the fruit of the Spirit test, when we're kept waiting for doors to open. That may be telling us some things about ourselves. Sometimes I hate to wait in lines. I'll be quite frank with you. I have, you know, some of you are saying, yeah, Dave's saying, yeah. It was funny, when I met my uncle, Claire, whom I had never met in my life, I met him, I think, when he was 72, 73, and this was about 6 or 7 years ago. Maybe I have his age a little bit wrong, but he was in his late 60s, early 70s when I met him for the first time. And he lived at that time in White Plains, New York, and we'd taken the kids to New York to see New York City, and Uncle Claire had so very graciously opened his home to us and volunteered to be the tourist and take us through New York. And when I saw him drive, I said to myself, that's where I get that from. That's Weidman blood, not Wood blood. We were just so much alike in our wanting to take another road, even though it was longer, if we didn't have to wait in a line or drive up on a curb to get through somewhere. It's just an absolute panic. So, quick to complain when inconvenience are imposed upon. We've all sinned and come short of the glory of God. Now, how did you do on this test? No volunteers, please. But a yes on all these questions. If you answered yes on all of them, or a significant majority of them, maybe four or more, it would suggest a high degree of hostility in your life, or at least some hostility in your life, if not a high degree. If you answered all 7, I'd say high degree. It would indicate a tendency in your life to be critical, thoughtless, overly inconsiderate, overbearing, the list is not done, impatient, sarcastic, argumentative, unreasonable, quick to show temper, and a hostile reaction to people in general. And no on all 7 above would indicate an absence of hostility, probably. Patient, humane, tolerant, forgiving, accepting kind of personality. All the people that scored all no's are either telling the truth, in which case God bless them, or are deceiving themselves, in which case some member of their family will help go over your list and set the record straight. Okay? We might take a moment in looking at kinds of anger. The Scriptures speak of a number of kinds of anger, and we know from valid emotional principles that there are different kinds of anger in our life. And we want to avoid the mistake of a saying that all anger is wrong. That's a common fallacy that many Christians fall into, that any expression of anger is wrong. It's not the case. We'll see that as we look at different kinds of anger. One kind of anger is simply irritation or displeasure. Something irks us. It appears maybe rather suddenly, or someone inconveniences us, and we're not really deep-seated anger. There's not real rage maybe necessarily going on. We're just irritated and displeased. The disciples have this kind of experience in Luke 9:55, where they're irritated that some villages have rejected the Lord, and so their irritation forms a suggestion. Lord, send fire down upon them and burn them up. A little bit irritated. The Lord, on the other hand, could be irritated himself. Mark 11:20, He denounced and upbraided cities where His most mighty works had been done. Chorazin, Bethsaida, Capernaum. Mark 16:14, He was irritated with the disciples and upbraided them for their unbelief. Expressed displeasure. It was not anger. You see, being irritated or upbraiding or expressing displeasure does not have to be of itself sinful. It can be a corrective technique designed to show someone else that that behavior is unacceptable. A second kind of anger is indignation. Indignation. And generally, indignation is a kind of anger which is a feeling resulting from the mistreatment of someone else or from an injustice which is perpetuated. Indignation frequently has a very positive kind of connotation to it. We must be careful, though, because things can be tricky. Someone else, we could say, well, they're just angry. And when we have the same reaction, we're indignant. But Jesus could be indignant. Mark 3:5, in the synagogue, he looked around and people were daring him to heal on the Sabbath. And the scripture says he looked around with anger. In Mark 10:13-14, people were bringing little children to Jesus to have him touch them, but the disciples rebuked them. When Jesus saw them rebuking, he was indignant. He was concerned about justice and about mistreatment of someone else. And sometimes we as Christians need to be aroused to get indignant over things that we treat with passivity. I shall never forget the occasion when my stepfather, who's now with the Lord, Jules' dad, was sitting in a laundromat down south in his hometown, and a black man with his young son had come in from the evening cold waiting to catch a bus across the street and was just getting warm in the laundromat, and the owner of the laundromat came over and kicked them out. Solely for the reason he was black. And when my wife heard about that, she has a good sense of indignation. And she really chided her dad that he sat there and didn't say anything. Dad, that was a time you should have said something. But he was quiet kind of person and hesitated to do those things. A third kind of anger is wrath. Wrath. Wrath can have a good and bad side to it. Wrath is frequently a term used of God. In fact, it describes God's settled disposition of rejection toward whatever does not meet His law or satisfy the demands of His justice. I realize that's a rather technical definition. But the wrath of God is being poured out from heaven against all manner of unrighteousness, Paul says in Romans chapter 1. And in a sense, it operates like a law, God's wrath does. If you reach down and touch a bare electrical wire, you're going to encounter a law that that electricity is carrying a force to it, which repels you because you have touched it ungrounded. And there is this sense, too, when we attempt to make relationships with God and are not grounded by grace, not grounded by the covering of the blood of the cross, we experience God's wrath, God's subtle disposition. Sometimes wrath on the negative side is simply fervid anger that seeks vengeance or punishment, and in no way can it be satisfied. It is determined to punish to the nth degree. Nothing will satisfy it. A fourth kind of anger is resentment. Resentment is often suppressed anger brought about by a sense of grievance. We maybe really haven't even expressed that anger, but we are ticked off about something. And we just remain ticked off. Have you ever been really ticked off about something? And it comes out in often not directly attacking what we're ticked off about, but we wind up hitting something that is tangential to it. I mean, it's a sidetrack, but it's a way of coming around and releasing some of the anger that we feel. Finally, there is simply rage and fury, which is intense, uncontained, explosive emotion, violently punishing or punitive, and knowing no satisfaction. White hot fury and rage. So there, just by these five different manifestations of anger, you can immediately see there are different forms, some of which in proper expression could be positive, some of which can be very destructive, not only of others but toward ourselves. We want to take some moments to look at unwholesome results of anger. I think a lot could be said about positive results of anger, that it is people that get inflamed with a sense of the need for justice that often bring about the greatest changes. The evangelical social reformers, for example, were inflamed, indignant about the slave trade, about child labor, mistreatment of labor, all these kinds of things, and it caused a great cleansing in a society. And in the Christian body today, there needs to be greater levels of anger about things that destroy people. But there are some focusing that there is some focusing I'd like to do on unwholesome results of anger rather than the positive aspects for tonight. Anger that is unwholesome will destroy a family. That's the first unwholesome result. In fact, the first time that anger is in the Bible, it occurs in Genesis chapter 4, verses 5 and 6, the first family, and it happens to Cain. So Cain was very angry, and his face was downcast. And his anger brought about the death of his brother. And when people are angry with one another in family, it brings the destruction of that individual and that family relationship. It may not physically bring about their destruction as Cain did toward Abel, but it destroys, it withers something of the person that we are living in family with. Our anger hurts, it maims, it cripples, it makes free and wholesome, loving responses very difficult because we create those sorts of destructive barriers. Police, I understand, and Dave Brooks again could speak of this more adequately than I, but the statistics are that police receive more calls for family conflicts than they do for aggravated assaults, murder, and all serious crimes put together. Dave, is that true in your patrolling work? You receive more calls in regard to family conflict than any other thing. In America, I think these are 81 statistics, 60% of all homicides were against family members. 26% of police fatalities came in the handling of family disturbances. And there's a lot of violence that occurs in family that is never of the physical kind, but is of the word kind. Words can maim and hurt for life as well. Two times in the prophet Jeremiah and Ezekiel, Jeremiah 31:29 and Ezekiel 18:2, this proverb is spoken. It's evidently a common proverb in Israel. The fathers have eaten sour grapes, and the children's teeth are set on edge. It's a good phrase, isn't it? Parents have gotten angry, and the result is the kids are grinding their teeth. Their teeth are set on edge. So unwholesome anger destroys our families. Secondly, it destroys ourselves. The Lord in the Sermon on the Mount, for example, talked about the difference between physical murder and mental murder. And basically says they have the same etiology, it's the same source out of the evil of the heart. And it produces death. Reacting with anger, someone has said, is like throwing a cactus at another person with your bare hands. The other person may get hurt, but you will too. Destroying ourselves with anger. We do not become the wholesome, balanced, kind, loving, thoughtful, considerate person we need to do when we are angry. No one, I think, knows this here in this room better than me. Norman Wright has a superb quotation on anger, which I included in your notes for this evening and didn't even leave room for you to fill in the blanks because I'd rather you listen to it and read it as I say it than have to worry about missing a word. Anger motivates a person to hate, wound, damage, annihilate, despise, scorn, disdain, loathe, vilify, curse, despoil, ruin, demolish, abhor, abominate, desolate, ridicule, tease, kid, get even with, laugh at, humiliate, goad, shame, criticize, scold, bawl out, irritate, beat up, fight, compete with, crush, offend, and bully another person. Now, that pretty well says it, doesn't it? Three, anger prevents us from solving the problem. Have you ever found that when you are white-hot mad, and now we're talking about unwholesome anger, that you're unable to think coolly, rationally, and logically to get out of the impasse? This is the problem with arguments, why they never solve anything, is we get it off our chest, but we don't really solve the problem because we are so white hot. And what happens when we argue with somebody else? We get them defensive. And if somebody argues with us, we have a tendency to get defensive, and rather than seeking peace in the relationship, we all have an ammunition pile. And so we reach into the ammunition pile and we say, you lobbed that that bomb over here, I've got a bomb I'm going to take now, and I'm going to lob over your way. Shoo, take that, you know. And they say, I've got one in my arsenal here, you haven't heard yet here, take that. And, you know, back and forth we go until we've really detonated one another. Prevents us from solving the problem. And our anger has to cool. And we have to really get back to what is a basic Christian response if we're going to solve a problem in unwholesome anger expressions. Fourth, anger does not change. That's another unwholesome result, is anger will not change someone else. That is, unwholesome anger won't. Now, the Lord's wholesome indignation obviously brought change. But now I'm talking about things like yelling at a person, berating a person. Yelling at a child for being sloppy does not teach the child how to be neat. Downing a spouse for something they've done which is not acceptable to you does not create good results. Even though it may get a lot off of us, it doesn't necessarily produce and won't really produce any positive change in them. It'll produce resentment. If we're going to get change in someone else, we're going to need to find a creative way to use our anger or to express our anger in a way that is acceptable in the way the Lord would. Five, anger is another unwholesome result, is it is contagious. Proverbs 29:22. An angry man stirs up dissension. And so other people become embroiled in a dispute. As a person who's been raised among Christians all my life, this is frequently the case when there's conflict between believers. It has a way of spreading. Now, if anger has such an unwholesome way, and yet if we just sit on anger and don't do anything with it, it can compound and become more and more deep and repressed or suppressed in our life, and it can be like sitting on a volcano and getting an ulcer if we don't find a way to release that anger in a Christ-like way. Someone has said, anger is like gunpowder. Depending on how it is directed, we can blast away at injustice or kill and maim the innocent. Anger is like gunpowder. We can blast away at injustice, be doing in effect a good work, or kill and maim the innocent, a bad work. How do we release anger in a Christ-like way? Let me share some steps that have biblical precedent behind them. First of all, any expression of anger needs to be without hatred. There is no hatred, malice, or resentment. When we release anger and there is hatred, malice, or resentment in our life, which has not really been cleansed by confession, forgiveness, or prayer, we will only make a situation worse instead of making it better. This is the marvel of the Lord's personality, that he could express anger and yet do it without hating people. He could express anger without malice, that is, he had no desire that someone pay with their pound of flesh. No desire that he drive somebody else into the ground and demean them. In fact, 1 Peter 2:23 says, when they hurled their insults at him, he did not retaliate. When he suffered, he made no threats. Instead, he trusted to him who judges righteously. And when we are really angry about something, if we would spend some moments before we express that anger, praying about it, that anger could come out in significantly different ways. And believe me, there is no one in this room who knows that, I think, better than I do. In fact, this has been a great struggle with me to mentally and spiritually take time to cleanse my heart before I release my tongue. And yet, if we are going to create positive healing environments, that is exactly what we need to keep calling upon the Lord to allow us to do. Second way of releasing anger in a Christ-like manner is controlled expression. Controlled expression. James 1, 20, or 19 and 20 says, "Let every man be quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger, for the anger of men does not work the righteousness of God." James 1, 19 and 20, "Let every man be quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger, for the anger of men does not work the righteousness of God." I'm impressed also as I read that scripture with the example of the Lord in Mark chapter 11, verses 10 and 11, when he enters Jerusalem on Holy Week. And Mark simply says that the Lord looked around, and then he went out to Bethany. When it was the next day, he came back and cleansed the temple. I think the reason why he looked around that entry day in Jerusalem is he knew if he began cleansing the temple that day, he would set loose a fire of rage through that crowd. And not only would he be turning over the tables of the money changers, there'd be a full-scale riot from his followers doing the same thing. And so he stopped, hesitated, and chose to give his anger some control. Ephesians 4:26 specifically tells us about control by saying, "In your anger, do not sin." It's interesting, the scriptures never say to us, "Do not be angry," but simply, "In your anger, do not sin." Controlled expression, control, taking some moments to consider, to reflect, to be slow, to not jump to express it, but then to find a way of expressing the anger. Because the opposite of expressing anger is repression. And if you bury anger without dealing with it, it's like burying something alive within you. And it'll come back to have a foul odor coming up out of you if you try to bury something within you. Therefore, Ephesians 4:26 and 27, in saying to us, "In your anger, do not sin," says, "Do not let the sun go down while you are still angry, and do not give the devil a foothold." Here is a beautiful biblical admonition to say to us, do not allow anger to pile up in your life and in your relationships. Keep a clear channel flowing so that you may deal with the anger in the day that it occurs rather than storing it. Anger stored is like acid stored. It seeks to eat away. Express it, but don't store it up for some hellish kind of release. Have I ever told... Yeah, I think I have. Maybe I... No, I don't think I want to tell that. My childhood experience of having some years in Tibet, where people never wash from the time they're born till they die, taught me some very unhygienic customs as a kid that only took a bath once a week, and besides there was no running tap water like there is here in America. And my object every week was to see how absolutely dirty I could get, and Mother would have to, I think, take a Brillo pad to get my ears clean, if such a thing existed out there. It really hurt. The reason why it hurt so much is that it had accumulated over a period of time. And it's wonderful when you cleanse yourself on a daily basis, things don't pile up. That's what the scripture is saying about anger. Don't let it get crusty in your heart or in your spirit, or it's going to hurt like crazy when you try to clean it up. And a third thing for controlled expression in anger, control expression and our motivation in anger, in expressing anger, it'll be best for us if we do the expression from an unselfish motivation. That is controlled expression. If our motivation in releasing the anger is to strike back at somebody, to get the last shot fired across the bow, to have the last word in the argument, to put the other person down where they belong, then our motivation is self-justifying. But if anger is really for the benefit of someone else, and it's being given to, if you will, shake a person out of complacency or stand on the side of someone who has been treated unjustly in order to pursue justice, then anger can be a very upbuilding kind of experience. How do we deal with anger in our life? A last kind of major point before some of our panel members come. I think one of the things that an angry person wants to see happen is everything to change around them. I wouldn't be angry if that situation hadn't occurred. I wouldn't be angry if that person hadn't so poorly mistreated me. And if they'll quit treating me that way, and if that situation will go away, I'll be a different person. The problem with that, as you well know, is that it locates a spiritual solution to our lives coming from a source outside of ourselves over which we have no control. In other words, we're placing our happiness and well-being into the hands of someone other than God and ourselves. We are depending upon the other person to change or the circumstance to change rather than saying, "Oh Lord, I may be the innocent party here, but help me to change. Help me to get the tools to come to grips with this." It's not change them. It's, "Oh Lord, change me." The old gospel song, "It's not my neighbor, whatever, but it's me, oh Lord, standing in the need of prayer." How do we do this? How do we deal with anger? Well, five quick suggestions. I believe that any spiritual problem we're having in our life, we should begin by dealing with it through prayer. It's amazing what God will speak to us when we just quiet ourselves in a moment of prayer. What does the song go? "What a friend we have in Jesus. Oh, what needless pain we bear. All because we do not carry everything to God in prayer." And in times in my life when I have had difficulty coping with anger, when I just stop and be quiet and say, "Lord, help me, show me, especially show me where I am wrong." Do you know the Holy Spirit is not the least bit hesitant at telling you where you're wrong? And my problem with that is that I say, "Now, Lord, that's not fair, because I was less at fault in this than the other person." But the Holy Spirit says, "I'm not dealing right now with the other person. You asked me to help you, and that's what I'm doing." Now, here are some things that need to happen in your life to deal with the anger. Adrian Van Camp, whom I believe is Catholic and is a Catholic writer in the field of self-awareness and spiritual awareness, prays this beautiful prayer in reference to anger, and he writes a book on the gentle life. "Lord, keep me aware of whom I feel angry with, that I may not punish the innocent. Let no anger grow in me like a volcano ready to explode at the slightest remark. Before I bring my offering to your altar, let me be reconciled in my heart with my brother who angered me." A good prayer. Second way to deal with anger is through counsel. Share with a spiritually mature third party who can advise and lead. Maybe a friend, maybe a member of family, maybe a pastor, maybe a counselor. But as we, start with the therapy of dealing with anger, begin with prayer. Some things do not yield to simply maybe prayer alone with ourselves and God. God will bring along, because of our prayers, other people to assist us. Sometimes we need another person who is neutral, safe, and wise, that we can just unload to and get our feelings out. And I found that many times by simply getting the feelings of anger out with a neutral party who knows me well enough to evaluate me and advise me, that I can look at how irrational I have been, how emotionally led I have been. Whereas if I had released what was going on in me to a person that I was upset with, I would have done a great deal of damage to them, perhaps to their relationship with the Lord. But by releasing that to a person who can hear me, love me, pray with me, and just simply reflect back to me and let me hear myself, it can be a marvelously healing experience. The third way of dealing with anger is through love and forgiveness toward the offending party. Through love and forgiveness toward the offending party. Seven specific things the Lord teaches us in the Gospels. One, that we be reconciled to our brother. A state of irreconcilability is not acceptable to the Lord. Now, I should qualify that by saying some people have really made genuine attempts to be reconciled with another person, and that other person has not responded. If that is the case, then the Lord looks to you like he looked to David when David wanted to build the temple, and the Lord said it isn't possible, but the Lord said it was good that it was in your heart. And if the other person refuses to be reconciled, that is not meant to keep us away from having a reconciling attitude in spirit. Our goal is reconciliation. A second response through love and forgiveness is simply be willing to go the second mile. Jesus talks about this in Matthew chapter 5, going the second mile. Third, loving the person who is causing or we feel causing the anger in our life. Loving does not mean screwing up the courage to get emotionally good feelings about them so that we all of a sudden feel kind of really, I feel so warm and loving to them and you'd really like to hit them one. Am I speaking too plainly here? Love is first of all a decision of the will. It is a determination to go the second mile, to speak well of the other person, to pray for the other person, and to do good to them, which other steps we'll look at. Like the fourth step is bless them, speak well of them. When we are angry, it's easier to speak ill of someone. Five, pray for them as a part of love and forgiveness. We've, in the first step, through prayer, prayed for ourselves and our own attitude. Now we turn around and pray for the other person. Six, do good to them. When you're angry with somebody, you want to get them back at them. Do good to them. And seventh, forgive. Reconcile, go the second mile, love, bless, pray for, do good, forgive are all steps toward forgiveness toward the offending person. I think another step in dealing with anger is through development of patience and spiritual growth. Underline that word development. Most of us are not made overnight. God does not have a habit of putting us in microwaves, pressing a button, and we come out all great in 30 seconds time. Fortunately for us, He justifies us in a split second. But developmentally, He sanctifies us over a course of a lifetime. And God, through a process of anger, may be putting some good things in our life, teaching us how to become a more patient person and how to spiritually grow and work through our hostility. Finally, in dealing with anger, we need the constant recognition that no offense by another person could possibly equal our guilt before God. No offense by another person toward us could possibly equal our own guilt before God. And this is Jesus' great story of the two debtors, that if God could forgive us of the greater debt, so also are we to forgive someone of the lesser debt. Jesus speaks a very profound word to us when He says, "My peace I give to you." When He continually, in appearing after His resurrection, says peace, He knows that we need ease and love in our life, and that fear and hostility and unwholesome anger need to go. I pray this evening that before this service is done, God will begin healing processes in the lives of those who are facing angry situations which you have not been able to get a hold of.